Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Mar.
Welcome back to Masters of Mar. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome to the circus. Welcome to the fair.
It's live.
The history of magic.
This is being filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Yes, we do.
We have to say that now.
Yeah.
We have a special guest.
We do.
Hello! Back for a second offense, I guess.
Yeah.
Sean Penrod here from MTG Pro Tutor. Thanks, guys, for having me back.
You're welcome. So this is kind of like the other side of your podcast experience-ish, because the first one we did a Pro Tour preview, being that you're the guy from Pro Tutor, and now we're doing a lore episode, seeing that you have a lore podcast thing you're trying to put together.
That's true.
Yeah, so quickly, before we get into all of our shenanigans, shout-outs, and story, your lore story is something you were trying to do, like a full-on pro retelling of the Magic story with actors, with a pro studio, sound effects, the whole deal, so that people could get really stoked on actually learning the history. We're going to do like a verbal history, an oral history, if you will, of Magic
and
the story.
So make sure everyone get your smoking pipes, put on your smoking jackets,
yes.
Surrounded by leather-bound books of fancy varieties, and ready to listen.
Yeah, so basically, if you guys listen to this and you're like, oh, this was cool, wouldn't it be cool if there was an actual audiobook version of this, like an actual retelling with pro actors? This is still something that's on the table. They're still funding. It's a little short of it now, but if you guys love the story and you do want to hear that, there's a great opportunity at the end of this to go and visit, and Sean will talk all about that at the end of the podcast. So, you know, if you like this and you like that sort of thing, then that's what you should do. And then there's more things we're going to say now, too, which are, we're on Twitter. We're the Masters of Modern Podcast. We have
at the MMCast.
Yep. And we have a sister podcast.
The Command Zone.
Also on RocketJump.com, just like us. That's cool. And then also the last thing is that we're all personally on Twitter. I'm Ben Bateman Media.
I am at Kes Wiley.
And I am at Sean Penrod.
But that's S-H-A-U-N, for those wondering, because I was mistaken. I misspelled it. And then, of course, we have a microphone you hear us through, and it's a blue mic. And we bought it because you guys on Patreon.
Yeah, this is for the live cast. So last time we did it, and you can actually go see on YouTube because that's where it's posted. The audio is awful.
Terrible.
It's like real bad.
Appalling.
But because, you know, Patreon's supporting us, and they're the ones helping us accomplish this live feed, we decided to spend some of that funds to buy some sweet mics for the plug into the computer so that we have double computer sound.
Yep.
People complaining for your eardrums, hopefully that I figured out how to lower the sound so it's not hurting your ears as much. Let me know if that's a problem still.
Yeah, and so going forward, that's exactly the kind of thing you'll see if you do go and support the Patreon. Obviously, there's various levels of commitment. Some of them allow you to be part of live deck techs, where you submit like your ideas, and then we read them and we critique your deck ideas live on the podcast. We do that once a month. There's live audio messages that if you want to record to share with the community, we read those. There's going to be a forum we're going to be launching at some point in the future, additional video content, and of course, the swag box, which is essentially a set amount you pay each month to have a personalized Masters of Modern product that we design and then send to you.
Right.
And that's kind of what we have going right now. We'll have this merch in the future and stuff too.
Yeah. And so far, you know, we sent out playmats. We sent out I think by the end of this episode, you're going to have to answer what your favorites are. But me and Ben each have our two favorite cards. Ben's our Spellskite and Grand Architect. Mine are Venge Vine and Geist of St. Traft. And so we sent out 4 Geist foils and 4 Grand Architects signed for the second month. And then this month, the month that just ended, we're sending out some, because, you know, we're all about making sure you're hydrated. We did a whole episode about tournament hydration.
Yeah, tournament preparation and all that.
And so we're sending out, you get 2 Masters of Modern themed metal,
like aluminum branded water bottles.
Yeah.
So we're gonna send those out. And in fact, it's quite possible that if you're attending GPLA, you will, if you have paid into that month, you'll get them in time to use them at the GP.
Yeah.
And in fact,
I'm going to give like 50 high fives to anyone I see.
You know, it'll be a highlight of the weekend
if somebody
has one of those with them. So, that's the thing.
Yeah. And speaking of GPLA, so GPLA is coming up in 2 weeks.
Yep.
And we're not exactly sure what exactly we're going to be doing, but make sure to stay tuned to the Twitter, to our Facebook, which is at facebook.com/TheMMCast.
Yep.
Because we'll be starting to post, especially the week before that, a lot more information on what we're going to try and accomplish for that tournament, because it's going to be sweet.
Yeah, we're definitely going to do something cool. There'll be like some sort of physical, interactive type of thing we're doing with people. So
yeah.
keep stay tuned for that, because it'll be fun to hang out with some of you guys and do something. Yep. So we'll let you know. Just go to the Twitter and you'll know exactly what's going on. Without further ado, we should get into the story of magic. And I don't know what's going on here. The story behind this is that Kessler at one point was like, "Do you guys want to hear the story of magic?" And I was like, "No, we don't."
The story behind that is, I asked you multiple times, like, "Oh, we could do a story episode tonight," and you're like, "No."
I was always like, maybe like as a bonus episode on another podcast that I'm not involved in ever. No, but people were like, "We really want to hear the lore episode." And like, look, I'm gonna be honest with you guys. I think this stuff is pretty sweet. Like, I like history, and I also really enjoy Game of Thrones, and I really, really enjoy fantasy novels, and I'm a huge comic book reader. So, like,
nerd,
there's no reason I won't like this. I think I'm just stubborn and resistant to change.
Well, I think also in your defense, you started playing Magic in the early days, and like Magic storytelling in specific eras has been pretty mediocre.
Are you going to talk about Gerard Capuchin today?
Actually, I kind of like the whole Tempest Block stuff is fine, but I think like all this stuff with Kamal, it's like. Like he's like a pit fighter, and then
Fist of Krosa.
And some stuff happens. We don't have to get into that. And all the stuff Kamal with his cabal, like all of the like, there was like a period of time where like the stories would be very inherent to just that block,
right?
So like lore and block story is like very in depth and all about like these characters that haven't been relevant since. If you look at like
is Time Spiral Block, like interesting, or is it like
Time Spiral Block is sick,
really?
So that because what Time Spiral Block is kind of like. You know, and Crisis of Infinite Earths in comic books, where they like reset the rules and everything in the universe so that they could actually tell a real story. And so that's where, and then they kind of like touch upon all the characters. So that's kind of a good starting point.
Well, because there's all that, like, I love, if you guys listen to this podcast, you know that I love Time Spiral Block, and I like a lot of the legends from Time Spiral. So Joyer of the Gitu and Ithai Arcanus and Mishra Artificer Prodigy. And like, these are all cards that I really, really like. Radha, Ertekeld. Like, these are all the legends.
So a lot of those are like legends from old stories that never got cards.
Yeah.
But the main thing that they did, and it's really relevant to kind of the story from that point on, is before that point, planeswalkers were gods.
Right.
They literally Karn created Mirrodin for funsies.
Right.
So, but what that did was it made it so these characters were much more relatable that you could actually tell stories about, and they gave us the Neo Planeswalkers.
Got it.
Basically, Dominaria was being overrun by all of this time warpage. I guess is the best word to come up with. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff.
There we go.
Right.
And
like all the planeswalkers had to like give up their spark or something to like fix everything. So then they became slightly less god-ish.
Yeah. So like all these, and like it's kind of been the main relevant point for a lot of these character arcs. But basically, planeswalkers lost all their powers.
Right.
That's why, you know, Sorin killing Avacyn in the most recent set. Spoilers.
Sorin killed Avacyn?
Yeah, it's like on the card, the like the
I just read Vindicate. Them. I just read them.
The art on
Anguish, Anguish Unmaking, where you lose three life.
Yeah. It's like Sorin, like
the game day top eight promo.
Yeah, but like there's a lot of things that happen on cards that like don't actually happen the way they're perceived.
Ah, but now it's
they
important.
Do. Yeah, they changed that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
When they added the double design or story team, we'll get to that in a second. But the point is that Sorin was able to make Avacyn when he was a godlike planeswalker.
I see.
Karn was able to create Mirrodin when he's a godlike planeswalker.
Okay.
Liliana didn't need to make a deal with demons because she was immortal forever just because she was a planeswalker. But then once the whole time shift happened in Time Spiral Block, Liliana became mortal. Nicol Bolas no longer was the most powerful thing in the world, or in the multiverse. And Sorin, you know, is now just a regular old fancy planeswalker.
So let's newfangled. So why do we do this? Because I'm listening, and I like all the characters, and I like what's going on. But what I want to know is, I'm somebody who basically I could tell you like I think I know some of these characters because I've seen them on cards. Some cards I like more than others, and like there's people who I'm like, oh, I think I know who that dude is, but like, oh, I've seen him in two different colors, and he looks different here. And then I'm also obviously it's a little more clear with the planeswalkers. They've done a good job with that because
that's pretty much all that matters now. So, like, all the characters, the other ones, are somewhat important, but for the most part, the planeswalkers are the only characters
the whole
you need
story
to keep
now.
Track of.
So, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
My point is sort of like, you're like, who's Sarkon? And I'm like, well, I know the best version of him because it's the sweetest card. I know that, like, he's these colors then or he's these colors then, and I can kind of get an idea. You know, for instance, like, okay, Garrick Relentless, right? Like, that makes sense to me. It's pretty clear that, like, the backside, he's, like, tormented and kind of evil versus, like, the previous one, he's, like, a little more good, I think. So what I want to know is, If I'm somebody who kind of like knows nothing.
You're like Jon Snow status.
Yeah. If I'm somebody who kind of knows nothing, like, don't worry. As we're talking, like, I'll be able to jump and fill in blanks because, like, I've played Magic long enough to, and kind of paid attention to the story. But to take me from the beginning. If you were explaining this to somebody who really had no idea, they hadn't ever even looked at the cards. They literally had never looked at the cards. Where would you start?
I would start the villains. That's kind of where I start everything. It's how the better superhero movies are done. I guess the one way to start is to point out that superhero movies were doing really well.
Yep.
For the last, since Marvel started, Wizards decided, you know what? We want to try and maybe make an attempt to get a movie made of our property.
Right.
The stories that were currently being told don't really fit in a way that studios would be interested for it because it's not a continuous story. It's all about random characters that don't matter the next year. It's hard to show a continuation. And our main characters are these godlike beings that nothing's good about. That's why Time Spiral Block happened. That's why they decided to start making these Planeswalker cards that carry over year to year, main characters of the story and the people we follow because they literally were making their own version of superheroes.
So when they made Time Spiral Block, what you're saying is the idea was we're going to do a Crisis on Infinite Earths, we're going to reboot, and that's going to be followed up by Lorwyn, which housed the first five Planeswalkers.
Correct.
The next year, we had the first five Planeswalkers.
And they were originally supposed to be in Time Spiral Block.
Got it.
They weren't fully ready with the designs of the cards up to that. Like, they weren't fully comfortable with the design they came up
would
with.
They have
and
premiered,
so they waited a year
to would they have premiered in Future Sight, do you think, if that was the case?
Well, if you actually look at Tarmogoyf
references Planeswalker.
Exactly.
Right.
And that for that reason, like, they were in the works, they just weren't ready yet.
But and same as Tribal and Planeswalker are both on Tarmogoyf, and both of them literally came out the next year.
But that's part of the Future Sight idea. I mean, that it makes a lot of sense if you're making cards that reference things from the future. If they were going to premiere the initial five Planeswalkers, for those of who are listening, I can at least do this. The first five are Jace Beleren, Chandra Ablaze.
Chandra Nalar.
Chandra Nalar. Liliana, the five mana one. Liliana Vess.
It's all their names.
Garrick Relentless.
Nope. Wildspeaker.
Garrick Wildspeaker.
It's their names.
I'm doing great at this. And then a Johnny, the four mana.
Goldman.
Yeah. So that was a five. But the point is,
you named like everyone consistently the second one other than Jace.
I just look at this point, like the all right, whatever.
No, it's fine. So there's two ways to look at it. You can look at it in the main characters, but the problem is that they basically started adding five new Planeswalkers every year for a couple consecutive years.
All right.
But if you look at the main villain storylines, you can kind of get a good idea for like the main five storylines of Magic right now.
Okay.
So the place I would kind of start is the Phyrexians.
Who are they?
So the Phyrexians are like Magic's original big bad guy. They're basically the Borg meets zombies.
Yep. They're like some sort of like metallic zombie
hive mind,
and they want to like cover and take over everything.
Assimilate. They want to assimilate all to
they're
their
kind of like they're kind of like the mimics in Edge of Tomorrow a little bit, mindless and metallic and just eat everything.
Kind of. I would say the mimics have a more Eldrazi feel to them.
Oh, gotcha.
Personally, I would say these guys are much more. Like just like the virus trope, like zombies are this kind of thing. The Borg.
Yeah, I think Borgs are really good at parallel.
Got it. Okay.
They want to take over the universe by making everyone one of them.
Right.
That's the Phyrexians.
Super perfected robot people, and that's what they do. They like kill a person, and then you become infected, and then you become a new dude. And the infect mechanic is what kind of belongs to those characters.
Who are some of the famous Phyrexians, or are there?
So the big one is Yawgmoth.
Okay.
So like Yawgmoth's Bargain, Yawgmoth's Will, who are like two of the most famous old cards. And then if you look at Tomb of Yawgmoth, or Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth, which is like maybe the most relevant to modern, he was kind of the king of the Eldrazi the first time around.
Yeah,
and the Eldrazi originally were like, Phyrexian, the team king of the Phyrexians were first time around. And they were very cemented in black at that point.
Right.
And
you had Phyrexian Negator. You had Phyrexian.
Right.
So who's like the boss? Yawgmoth,
that was back then.
Had they ever made a Yawgmoth card? Am I forgetting
one?
No,
they haven't.
They never have.
So back in the day, they didn't make cards for the main characters of their story.
How does Elish Norn fit into that?
So the whole plot of what Urza did after him and his brother fought or whatever, and we're not going to get into this, and what like all of the Tempest Block stuff with the
Skyship
Weatherlight and Drug, that's all dealing with Yawgmoth. Dealing with the Phyrexians. So they beat them. They beat the Phyrexians.
But they come back.
And all of them are dead. Except, like, the way the Phyrexians infect things is it's through, like, an oily substance.
Yeah.
That I'm... Phyrexes?
No, glistening oil?
Glistening oil. Yeah, that's
a
reference to it.
Yep.
So, Karn had some of it on him.
Yep.
But because Karn was a planeswalker,
Oh.
He no longer, he was able to fight off the, because Phyrexians can't take over planeswalkers. They can only take over non-planeswalkers.
In those days, he wasn't yet a planeswalker, or he was?
No, when Karn he got infected, he was no longer, because he's, Karn is the legacy weapon, which is what defeated, like right. He's all these pieces of this weapon that eventually killed the Phyrexians.
You're talking about Karn Silvergold.
Yes, Karn Silvergold.
From Urza's Saga. Right.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And yeah. Then he is now the planeswalker card. Back then, he was a planeswalker that got a legendary creature card because they didn't have the type planeswalker.
So when they made the card Karn Liberated, what does that represent in his story?
So Karn loses his spark during that time spiral block shenanigans. Okay. Ends up on Karn or on Mirrodin, which he made, and then slowly the oil that was now in his body that's no longer being prevented to be him taking over because he's no longer a planeswalker takes over Mirrodin. Mm. That's the plot of Return to Mirrodin. Scars of Mirrodin block. Is him, like, he's basically infected the plane again. And when you get to the end of it in New Phyrexia, he's become this like god creature to the Phyrexians. And Venser, Koth, and Elsbeth find him, and Venser teleports his heart into Karn, killing himself and giving Venser or Karn back his spark. And that's what the Karn Liberated Planeswalker card is. It's Karn liberated from the Phyrexians, now a planeswalker again.
And he's like a super, super cool dude who can take on everybody because now he's got a heart. But Venser, by doing that, Venser the Sojourner, he
is dead.
He died.
Yes.
So that's why we haven't seen Venser.
Because he saved Karn, and Karn's kind of like the main deal to save everyone. Here's my theory on what's going to happen here. Next time we go to New Phyrexia. So like New Phyrexians can deal with that.
Okay.
So Venser's whole deal was he was like a teleportation mage and a blue like scientist, and he was trying to figure out how to make planar portals. Which is kind of like the way Phyrexians used to get around because they can't planeswalk.
There was a card called Planar Portal, I believe, from Invasion Block. It's either Invasion or Weatherlight.
Invasion is the block about the Phyrexians invading in the Dominaria.
I think it's a 6-mana card.
And wasn't Karn made by Urza, right?
Yeah.
Karn is silver because silver is the only thing that can
travel through time.
Through time.
Yes. Because he's a time traveling robot.
Look at that. Planar Portal, 6-mana, Invasion, dead on.
You know your stuff.
Yeah. It's a Phyrexian thing.
Yep. All right.
So that's kind of the Phyrexian storyline. The main thing what Elish Norn is and what all the Praetors are is the new Phyrexians versus the old Phyrexians, which are like mono black. The new ones were in all 5 colors.
Got it.
And each of those colors has a main leader. There is obviously a vie for who's the best one, especially after Karn left. And I think Elish Norn is numero uno, the one that kind of came up on top.
Cool. Certainly, she seems like the most powerful. The other 4 of which are Urabrask, the Hidden,
yeah.
Vorinclex, the Hidden Hunger or something.
The
Hunger, the green one.
Yeah.
The black one, or the blue one is the legacy one, the reanimator guy. Jyn Gitaxis.
Yep.
Or no, he's not reanimator. You lose your hand. Jyn Gitaxis.
I mean, he's only seen playing Legacy Reanimator because you all opponents discard their hand because their hand side is 0, and you now draw 7 cards.
And
every
the
turn.
Black one is Shieldred the Whispering.
Yes.
One, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think the red one is technically now like working with the good guys. I don't know. I haven't looked into like the post. Because the other problem with this era is they weren't doing the Uncharted Realms. It was all based on books that were generally bad.
Right.
And Scars of Mirrodin Block specifically had like kind of the least built-in book storylines to go along with it.
Got it.
Yeah. So that's kind of the Phyrexians. That's kind of what they're about. There's a lot more we can get into if we want to get into later. There is. That's kind of the original Magic story and how it's still continuing a little bit today. I would say the other piece to that kind of old era of Magic that's still being told is kind of the Nicol Bolas storyline.
Okay.
This is probably the least developed at this point,
hmm.
where you just see Nicol Bolas had like some stuff to do when he first showed up during Scars, during...
In the original you're talking about? Back
no,
in the
no,
day?
No.
Legends?
Shards of Alara. Okay. When he got, so gotcha. Nicol Bolas was in Legends, one of the Elder Dragons, was a Planeswalker, and then was as godly as all the other one and enjoying how awesomely powerful he was. Then the thing happened, the mending.
Did they ever, so let me ask
your
you.
Your Crisis on Infinite Earths moment.
Well, so I want to ask really quickly that, unless I'm mistaken, the classic 5 were Nicol Bolas, Arcadis Sabbath, Chromium.
Oh, I know Chromium as well. I don't remember the original 5 Elder Dragons.
Vivictus Osmati, and I'm forgetting the 5th one, I think. Something. But anyway, I think that was there's 5 for original ones, and they're all bad by today's standards. They're like huge, they're like enormous upkeep costs. Like,
yeah, but weirdly enough, I think in general, I mean, this is from Commander, so not relevant to Modern. It's also not legal in Modern, but the Nicol Bolas original card is still pretty decent. It's one of the better Grixis commander cards.
Sure.
Generals, because when it hits, its ability is when it hits someone, they discard their whole hand, which is just extremely powerful.
Yeah, he's fine. I mean, they're still all like very, very bad by today's standards.
And he doesn't have a cumulative upkeep. You pay 3 mana every upkeep.
Yeah, yeah. So what you're saying is that in the story, they haven't done anything else to make note of Vivictus Asmati or Chromium or Arcadius Sabbath, these other ones. It was just Nicol Bolas was the only one that they decided to do anything with. Is that correct?
So far, yeah. I mean, he's the big baddie that keeps showing up in some way, shape, or form, and the other ones are kind of...
Palladium Wars, that's the fifth
obscure.
One.
Oh, okay.
I had that card.
So some things on this. Urbrask is... This is from Stark Maximum. Urbrask is, in fact, secretly working with the Resistance because since the Red Phyrexians are able to tap into emotions, they're the only ones that feel any degree of empathy.
Oh, gotcha.
Eilish Norn was... This is from... Smirti Neveri. I'm not going to read that correctly. He believed that Mirrens should be allowed... Eilish Norn was generally considered the strongest, though Jyn Kataxias and her were consistently at odds with one another. Urbrask did not stop the Mirrens from traveling through the furnace level of Mirrodin because of the need to tie to freedom. He believed that the Mirrens should be allowed to fight for their freedom, even if it was entirely futile.
Got it.
Which is super dope in terms of color pie philosophy and Phyrexian lore. Bolas destroyed all the other Elder Dragons.
Ah, there you go. That's why you don't have any more Bolas dragons.
Is super evil.
Yeah, he's
a bad dude.
So, the mending happened.
Okay. That's Time Spiral.
That's Time Spiral Block. So, Nicol Bolas loses all of this intergalactic power. You know, what's the line Genie says in Aladdin?
Phenomenal cosmic power.
Yes, he no longer has phenomenal cosmic power.
I see.
So, he decides to cause conflux, which is what the kind of the story in that block is that he notices that there's this plane that was shattered into 5 new planes, and he thinks by bringing them together, the amount of magic that gets expended by that will make him have
phenomenal cosmic power.
I see.
So that's the kind of the plot of that. He kills Johnny's brother. That's why Johnny's all like vengeant. We also get
He's got the scar on his eye now, or that he always had that.
I don't know.
Does he have a scar on his eye, or am I just confusing him with Scar from the Lion King?
I don't. He might have a scar.
You keep talking. I'll try.
All right. So that happens. This is also when basically he brings into his employ through mind manipulation. I think he completely erases the mind of Tezzeret. Who was also introduced in this block, and he basically makes Sarkon go crazy. This is the origin of Sarkon.
Got it.
And where it's relevant kind of moving forward.
He totally does lose his eye. I was dead on. Nice. Look, right? That's him? Left eye? Gone?
Oh, yeah. It's gone.
Look at that.
Yeah, I knew it. All right.
It's not going. Just the Lion
dead
King.
Eye.
Yeah.
This is a lot of Disney comes into this.
Yeah.
All right. So we're at Nicol Bolas. So Nicol Bolas brings those two people into his employ, and that's kind of the last we've seen from him. Other than him sending out Tezzeret to the new Phyrexia planet to kind of deal with the Phyrexians and see what's going on there, and him sending Sarkon to the Eye of Ugin.
Got it.
And that'll be kind of the last one, because that's the current storyline we're going through right now, and I'll get to Sarkon in a minute.
Okay.
The fourth kind of storyline is basically just surrounding Liliana of the Vale.
Okay.
She's the hero of these, but there's this thing called the Raven Man that we don't know a whole lot about, but he's basically this weird not planeswalker ghost thing.
Got it, yeah. he pops up in a recent story.
Yeah. So he's kind of following Liliana around, trying to figure, like, torment her.
Yep.
And we don't know much about him. He's kind of the setup for what her storyline is going to be moving forward. The other thing is she's also ancient.
Liliana is. Gotcha.
And she, like Nicol Bolas, like Karn, like all these other guys, when the time mending stuff happened, lost a lot of her power. And so she was immortal, but now she's really, really, really old. So to gain her immortality and her power back, she made a deal with 4 demons.
Yep.
Grizzlebrand is one of them. Nerkoplex. He's the demon that was in M15. Or no, Magic Origins. The black legendary demon in Magic Origins.
Oh, yeah.
I can't say his name.
Kofled,
yeah, him.
Got it.
So like he's one of the demons. There's 2 other ones that I don't remember their names. Their names are out there, but I don't feel like looking it up because they're
and
having our cards.
The demonic pact.
Yeah. So like she's made a demonic pact. Exactly. Also a card. The one that you can lose.
Yeah. She's on that card.
made these deals, and now she's trying to kill them because she doesn't like having her life threatened by it, and that's how she got the chain veil, which is...
Oh, the thing that gives you the extra deal. You get the extra turn, right?
You get extra counters on each planeswalker when you tap it. And basically, it's making her super powerful, but it's also cursed and making her go crazy, and other stuff is happening that we haven't figured out.
So let me ask you with Liliana. All right, so Liliana Vess becomes Liliana of the Veil, or at least that's the next iteration of her.
Yeah, that's when she got the chain veil.
Gotcha. Liliana of the Veil. Getcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so she's more powerful with that, but she's also going crazy.
Yeah, you could argue she's literally the most powerful.
Right.
Legally.
Because the Chain Veil, clearly, and as evidenced
by its...
Well, because
Jace is banned. I'm saying in Modern.
Yeah. Oh, in Modern?
Yeah.
Got it. I thought you were just saying in the story.
I mean, in the story, I think Nicol Bolas is probably Karn, Ugin.
Because he's basically Unicron from the Transformers movie.
Although, eight mana planeswalkers are better, but yeah. Continue.
No, I just was going to say, as evidenced by the fact that in that card, the Chain Veil is like unplayable by Modern standards, pretty much. But like, if you're going to just go like on a basic power level, it's a very powerful and unique effect that almost you've never gotten. So the fact that she has that, the ability to do that in the story to some degree, makes her immensely powerful.
So you mentioned,
where does it come from, the Chain Veil?
There's these weird tribe dudes.
Yeah, we don't know really the origins.
We know their name. Basically, this tribe of plain people, I want to say aliens because it feels like aliens, created it. All their whole society is dead, and like all their ghosts are inside of it.
Okay.
But the Garrick Relentless, I think.
Right.
The Garrick that flips.
Yeah.
So him flipping, he's not just coming angry, he's being corrupted by the Chain Veil.
Right. Liliana curses him. You can see when he's got like some dark stuff on his face and he looks like he's screaming on the backside.
Yes, exactly. Because that's from the Chain Veil.
Got it.
So one of the theories for Shadows of Innershot of what's causing all of this madness, the two prime candidates, one is Emrakul, who it's most likely, and then there's the slightly less but possible chance is that it's the Chain Veil.
Right.
Those are like the two possible options.
Like the Chain Veil in and of itself is causing the madness.
Is forcing Liliana to like save herself. She's unleashing
we'll
on the planet.
Get into details on that.
We'll get to the last section once we get to the... We're at the 25 mark. All right. Any other comments from the crowd?
Who's this Ben Bateman guy? What a jackal.
All right. Ravenman has been theorized to be possibly Limdul of Yawgmoth. So like
Limdul.
Duel, that guy,
I love
Limdul. Limdul's
vault.
Oh, the other demon names for Liliana are Belzenok.
Basically, Balzamon from
Belzenlok and Razaketh are the other two. Liliana is one of the last living pre-mending walkers and likely the most powerful of the main story walkers right behind Sorin and Ugin.
Here's a card. Here's a card for the folks that probably don't remember this because it's real
old. What's the Anaki of Shandalar?
Limdul's Vault. You remember this card? This card is sweet. Let me read this.
It's like a pseudo tutor brainstorm all at once.
Yeah, it's weird. Oh. It's an instant. It's blue right. And black. It's a blue and a black. Look at the top five cards of your library. As many times as you choose, you may pay one life to put those cards on the bottom of your library and look at the top five cards of your library. Shuffle all but the top five cards of your library. Put those five on top of your library in any order. So you basically get to stack the top five of your deck over and over and over again and put if you don't like them, just put them on the bottom for one life. You don't get a card out of it.
Yeah.
But it's still sweet.
I think I remember sitting
for minutes on end waiting for somebody to resolve this in a commander game.
Horribly designed card.
What is this doing?
For the sake of gameplay, yes.
Isn't there another Limdul card? Is a black skeleton guy with like a book and his hands out like this?
I think that's him.
Yep.
Limdul himself.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Okay. So that's what people think the Raven Man is. I feel like that's really obscure.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure who it is. It's going to be interesting to find out. But last thing, the Anaki of Shandalar are the alien spirits inside of the Chain Veil. They're the ones. Shandalar is relevant. I hate Shandalar. I'm going to say the plane. I hate that we go there. I'm really glad corsets are gone, so we don't have to go back there.
One of Magic's most favorite planeswalkers came from there. So
who?
Chandra. Isn't she from Shandalar?
No.
Oh, I got her.
She's from Kaladesh. And Kaladesh is sick.
Yeah, Chandra of Kaladesh.
Yeah, it's got the Thopter plane.
Where the heck is Shandalar?
Shandalar is the one that like the corset has been based on. It's like the
Dominaria
light.
The
problem with Dominaria is Dominaria is an apocalypse, is like a post-apocalyptic land, so it's hard to do like generic stories there.
It's no, Sia sings about it, right? I want to swing on a Shandalar, right? No?
Yeah, that's it.
Never mind.
we're going to back to Shandalar eventually, most likely. You're right. We probably
there was
are. From Stark Maximum.
In that core set, there was One from each plane. Oh my gosh, I can't remember. The six mana.
I'm with Sirio over here. 1996. He wants to see Kaladesh also. That was probably my favorite of the new planes from Origins, because you know they did the five different planes that we saw where each of the characters are from.
Yeah.
Definitely the coolest one. All right.
Avatars, that was it. In the core set, they had Avatar Theros, Avatar of Shandalar was the red one.
Yes, and it was originally going to be Avatar of Tarkir, and it should have been,
interesting.
But they last minute changed it to Shandalar.
Reasons.
Mm. Got it.
Interesting. Lame reasons.
So having to do with Theros. Right. Not fun.
All right, so moving on storyline-wise, the Eldrazi. So this has kind of been the main storyline for the last 2.5 years.
Because people love War of the Worlds. They love like gigantic invasion aliens.
Yeah, like the Cthulhu level stuff, yeah. The Eldracore things, and you know, in general, Zendikar has this kind of sweet spot in everyone's hearts because it's where we all kind of came back to Magic. M10 followed by Zendikar is where they had the largest influx of new players in a long, long time. So
is that still the case, or it just was for a couple of years? It feels like it's still been just like spiking like crazy.
Every year it's 20%. I think it's the last year. I think last year it didn't go up that high.
Wow. They still went up, though.
Yeah, they've gone up 300% since Shards of Alara.
I know. 300%.
Yeah. That's a lot of players. Wow. That's awesome. I came back at the very end of New Phyrexia. Like, my first draft ever was a New Phyrexia draft. I had no idea what I was doing. And then ever since Innistrad, I've gone to every pre-release. But I originally came in on Gerard and Volrath and the Tempest.
Well, Tempest was when I first originally played. Yeah, and then, I stopped once Portal came. Not Portal. Unglued. Unglued got me to quit because Unglued is dumb.
It's amazing. I never realized this early, but like, you talk to people about Magic, and there's a very, and sorry, I'll just segue for a second, we'll get back to the story, but there's a very consistent pattern.
It's a live cast, we can't control what's going on.
When you talk to folks who used to play Magic, and it's a very, very consistent pattern, you pretty much can trace the most common point people will reference is 1997. People played in Tempest. They just, for whatever reason, Tempest was like that block, so the slivers, everything.
That was the first time, that was right after Portal came out, it was the first national super distribution around the country.
So you find, and in my mind, I thought everybody had the same experience I did growing up, which was that I started at Fallen Empires 4th edition. But that's because my older brother taught me to play in 1995.
And you're from Seattle.
Right, so it was closer to home. And in my mind, when I think about, you talk to people who really played back in the day, they'll reference like Revised. Rarely do you meet somebody who played during Unlimited or Beta. Revised is as old as it usually gets for people. But like the most common spot tends to be that Tempest block. Other than that, you talk to people who, like, everybody who played back then fell off and came back somewhere in the last 5 years. Like, that tends to just kind of be the story. I think it's so interesting, though, that, like, it's that same spot for everybody. Because they always say to you, I have a bunch of old Magic cards, and you go, what year about were you playing? And if they're like, 97, you're like, you have nothing. And then they're like, and then they're like 94, you're like, you've got a ton of money in a box somewhere. It's called a dual land. Find it.
Yeah, Mark Rosewater said that it's very common that the average Magic player drops out for like 9 years, has a 9-year gap, and then they come back. And that's maybe not average now.
Well, I thought they play for 7 years. I don't know. You might be right.
Maybe. There is a gap. It's very common for Magic players to play, have a gap, and then come back. And so, and for me, the reason why Tempest stands out so much is because of the story. Like, they used to have little, almost like comic books that came in the boxes.
In the box,
you buy, like, a box of cards, and you have the rules, and then you have, like, a little book that has pictures and stories, and that's how I know and remember Gerard and Volrath and Squee and all those little guys.
It's also the only time they ever did it. So you can actually line all the art up in Tempest, and the flavor text and the art will actually tell the story of Tempest Block.
The whole set?
The whole set.
Oh, my God. There's also a cool thing is they designed the legends from Invasion Block, the all of the characters from the Skyship Weatherlight, to all be like actually pretty sweet. Like they're all like, they're not like amazing, but they're all pretty sweet. So like there's Captain Sisse, which is cool.
Legendary creatures. Yep. She's a captain.
Right, that's awesome. There's Hannah, Ship's Navigator. She has a really unique ability. She can get back enchantments and artifacts from your graveyard,
She's a commander, right?
For an artifact.
All of them are.
Well, I know, but they reprinted her as commander.
For like an activation, there's those two.
She's Bant, I think.
I know that when they made in the third set in that block, Airtie the Corrupted, he's pretty sweet. He's the Esper colored one. But anyway, no, I just think it's cool. They did a good job in that time, like in those time with those characters for a few years of making, at least making the cards memorable, but they hadn't figured out exactly how to design
it. That was the first time they ever tried doing these are main characters. We're going to tell a story about it. Right. And to do it, they had to create the Weatherlight, the system that lets them travel from plane to plane because they are a multi-plane story. And Planeswalkers are too strong. So.
And even that, Skyship Weatherlight was a cool card. The Legacy Weapon was a cool card.
Yeah.
Like, those are all things that, like, I, even though I didn't know what was going on, when I think about, like, that time, I definitely do get a sense. You know, Sisse's Maneuver, I think, or, right? Gerard's Maneuver, Sisse's Maneuver. There's cards that, like, reference what's going on.
Right.
Right.
So, anyway, keep going.
So, that's been happening recently. That's what Anguished I'm Making is.
Nice.
Is cards telling what's going on in the story.
Yeah.
Like, back in the day.
Little moments, I think they call them. Yeah. Something like that.
Every set, I think, has four is what they're aiming for, five, four, that, five, that five. Tell the actual story.
Because they want you to be able to buy a box and have a sense of what happened.
Right.
Right. Speaking of what's happening right now, the Eldrazi. So the actual Eldrazi story starts way back. And we never actually got this as a set. This was only really prevalent in the Commander set that had the Planeswalkers.
Right.
So this is what happened when Nahiri was printed.
Okay.
And this is the origin of the Eldrazi getting locked on Zendikar. So Ugin, the Spirit Dragon.
Yep.
Sorin,
who
you know. And Nahiri, all together, lock the Eldrazi on Zendikar.
Got it.
Sorin's able to, you know, use his draining magic to weaken them. Ugin's using the power of colorlessness to kind of stop them from
using
their powers.
And Sorin.
No. And then Nahiri's uses her ability to do stuff with rocks to.
Got it.
Called geomancy.
Oh,
geomancy?
Cool.
Lithomancy, right?
Lithomancy.
Yeah.
To create all the hedrons that create the prison for
Got
the Eldrazi.
So because of his casting cost and the fact that he's like a giant sweet dragon, how powerful is Ugin in like contrast to like many of the other Planeswalkers? Is he more powerful than most?
He's more powerful than the new Planeswalkers.
I would say
like, look at the converted mana cost, and that's probably an idea of how powerful they are comparably to the other Planeswalkers.
Okay.
Like if they were to meet each other, they would like, one would... Like, Ugin could probably straight up murder everyone, but Nicol Bolas and Karn?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Just right up pick, like...
Pretty much it, yeah.
Maybe, like...
I mean, that was the whole Khanza Tarkir thing, was him getting in a tussle with Nicol Bolas and...
Yeah, I'm trying to think who could maybe take them on. Jace, maybe, just from, like, mind control is a broken ability.
Well, if we're going off converted mana cost, then I guess that means Elsbeth can probably almost... Because she's sick.
How powerful was Gigantic Garrick when he at that point in the story?
He's pretty powerful because he has like chainmail corruption plus his normal intended like I'm just bigger than everyone.
He's
and
a
I
monster.
Have a
he's like minus five destroy target.
He's like 9 foot nine and like all muscle.
Awesome. Yeah, I like that Garrick a lot. All right.
Like Garrick and Karn, I feel like could duke it out.
Sweet.
So, yeah, so I'm going to say, okay, so let's start. So they lock the Eldrazi. Then.
And why were the Eldrazi there in the first place?
The Eldrazi are just kind of like Galactus.
They're, yeah.
Like literally like based on Galactus. They're, as far as Ugin is concerned, this is the only person we have for information on this, they are an inherent part of how the universe deals with itself. They're a part of the universe's ability to digest and function, which is what Galactus is. Mm-hmm. Galactus is an inherent important part of how the universe exists in the Marvel universe.
Got it. So the Eldrazi though, they're like nature. They're
But
they're like the most evil, like devouring parasitic form of nature there is.
Yeah, so the way they describe the Eldrazi in storyline to kind of get an idea of what they actually are. So the Titans you see on cards are actually not the Eldrazi.
Correct.
They're kind of like if I was an Eldrazi and the underwater, like a pond, was like the reality, and I'm an Eldrazi in like the Aether, which is above the pond, and I reached my hand down there.
Okay.
That's my hand is what kind of the Eldrazi are representative of.
Exactly.
I see.
Yeah, the Eldrazi exist in the blind eternities, which is the space between planes, pretty much.
So when Nahiri locked him in there, she really didn't lock the full Eldrazi there. She just locked the
hands.
Like it's more like the head.
The tentacles.
Yeah, like sticking her head underwater.
The idea of it was pretty much like a monkey jar or a raccoon jar, whatever it's called. You see like greedy animals, raccoons or monkeys, they'll stick their hand inside a jar and they'll grab a banana and then they can't take it out because they make a fist and won't let it go. So they basically are trapping the fist or the head or some physical representation of the Eldrazi on a plane, in this case Zendikar, so that way they can't drift off and consume other planes.
Now,
so they still exist, but they're just trapped.
Do you think that the general like Eldrazi, the actual Titans themselves, are always very popular to Magic players.
Sure.
But this last, I didn't feel that Battle for Zendikar and Oath of the Gatewatch was actually a particularly popular set, like relative to some of the most popular. Do you think it's likely that at some point we will go back there again and they'll escape again? Or do you think we've seen the last of them for a while?
So we'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Got it.
So we're currently in first Zendikar block. So the plot of the original Zendikar block is Nissa is racist at this point. But
Nissa Worldwaker? No, Nissa Revan.
This is Nissa Revan.
Revan.
Who's the one that makes elves. Yeah.
Yeah.
She is on the plane. Soren's on the plane. And they're trying, like, she's trying to, like, and she had a vision of the Eldrazi and is trying to, like,
that's what an
get them off of her planet.
Black Soren. Soren Markov.
Black Soren. Yeah, original Soren. And so, like, they kind of go on an adventure to deal with that.
Got it.
At the same time, Chandra stole this scroll. And the scroll had Ugin style magic on it. It's written by Ugin. It's like a scroll of his. And she's traveling on, and Jace is trying to also get this scroll because someone told him to get it. I think it's the Ravnikans.
I was going
to
say, yeah, his whole thing, he gets mixed up with Liliana on Ravnica, and she like enlists him to be part of some like spy organization or whatever that they end up taking down together. But that's, yeah.
Yeah, for whatever reason, and that's what the duel deck was back in the day, the Chandra versus Jace, Jace and Chandra trying to get this scroll from each other in like a cat and mouse kind of deal.
How does Jace always, like, let me just ask you. I know it's because he's the hero of the story. I know Jace is their favorite character.
So this is actually a really weird misconception. Jace happens to be two of the most powerful planeswalkers ever printed. But Jace has only been the main character of a block twice.
Ravnica block, the second
Return to Ravnica block. And Shadow of Innistrad. This is the second time Jace has been the main character of a block. He's only one other time been the main face of a set, and that was Worldwake.
So
in 8 years of Planeswalkers, Jace has been a main character 2.5 times.
But my point is, how does Jace manage to always get mixed up and have another version of himself printed in yet another story?
Corsets. So Jace is the only one of the only two Planeswalkers that's been in every single corset ever.
And he's...
Corset doesn't have to do with the story?
Normally not.
Not really, got it. Yeah. Garrix was pet Planeswalker pretty much because so many people love him. Like, we're getting, you know, outside story. He's just relatable and that, you know...
Right,
that picked on kid that rises up to be the hero.
He's a kid who's too smart for his own good, who is kind of reclusive and doesn't want. Yeah, like he's a magic player.
So then, in the story, if they make a story for the movie, which that should be what we talk about at the end of the whole story, because we can hypothesize.
I think we could do a whole extra episode on the movie. But yeah, sure.
Would Jace be like he would end up being Liu Kang essentially?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think
Mortal Kombat reference for those who don't know.
Jace would be comparable to what Captain America or Iron Man are in the Marvel
movies. One of the two major ones. They would just elevate him for the purpose of the movie to being like...
I don't think it's even elevated. I think he's already. He is, yeah. I think he's that in the magic storyline, not to mention...
Got it.
Jace and Chandra are getting the scroll. Chandra comes to Zendikar.
Okay.
And Jace follows. And they eventually show up at the Eye of Ugin.
Okay.
Waiting at the Eye of Ugin at Nicol Bolas' behest is Sarkhan...
But now he's Sarkhan the Mad.
So Sarkhan's been chilling in the Eye of Ugin. So, I guess we can... Crazy. Okay, so we missed this part.
Sarkhan Vol.
Before Zendikar even, Nicol Bolas kills Ugin.
Got it.
Like, right after they lock the Eldrazi, Nicol Bolas shows up, kills Ugin.
What form was Ugin in at that point?
This is pre-mending.
He was like an actual dragon.
Both of them are like super gods.
Yeah.
Got it.
Like, it basically almost destroys the plane for both of them to die. At this point, Ugin's just by existing was like pooping out storm clouds that birthed the dragons. And that's where all the dragons on Tarkir came from.
Sweet.
So that happened. Nicol Bolas kills Ugin.
And that was like a battle of titans, like
that
was like Optimus Prime fighting Megatron in the Transformers movie. Like,
exactly that.
Okay.
And then end scene. So now we're at the Eye of Ugin. Sarkhan is stuck in there, and Ugin has basically ghost has been talking to him for
driving him crazy,
like a year driving him crazy.
So he goes mad.
So he's hearing voices and he's going mad. So Chandra shows up with Jace, and the three of them start fighting each other. Sarkhan becomes a giant dragon. Chandra uses ghost fire magic, which is Ugin's type of magic, colorless magic. Right. And Jace does Jacey things.
The card ghost fire? That's what that's from?
That's
Ugin's, Ugin magic.
Yeah.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. And all said and done, the fact that he had a colorless mage, a dragon, colorless fire, a dragon, plus three planeswalkers all in one place, unlocks the Eldrazi.
Got it.
At the same time, Nissa and Soren on their little adventure Nyssa somehow convinces Soren to let her blow up what's holding the Eldrazi locked onto Zendikar, allowing them to leave.
Okay.
And that is Zendikar block.
Okay.
Sarkon, then in his madness, starts looking for Ugin.
Because
like, Ugin has to be alive. Where is he?
And Sarkon, who's mad, that's why his ability is he has the random factor of I draw a card, but I like kill myself by being too greedy because I'm crazy, or I can make something into a dragon, but I can also make something. Right. So you can destroy things and turn them into dragons.
Well, so Sarkon's storyline from the beginning is Sarkon is a dragon mage. And so Sarkon started on Khan and Khan's. On Tarkir, and there's no dragons anymore. And he's like, oh man, I really want to see some dragons. And then his spark happens, then he ends up on Junt in one of the shards of Alara.
Got it.
And there he's like, oh man, dragons, these are sweet, but they're all like, he's looking for like the smart dragons of his world, and these dragons are much more just like angry sky beasts.
He's kind of like a crazy male Khaleesi in some ways.
Yes, exactly that. So on this plane, he eventually sees Nicol Bolas. He's like, oh man, Nicol Bolas. This is the guy. This is my dude.
This is the dragon of
dragons. This is the dragon of dragons. I'm going to worship him. And so in that, you know, manipulating him, Nicol Bolas then sends him to the Eye of Ugin to try and get him to open it because he knows that you need a dragon mage there to help open it. Which happens. Then Sarkon's like, oh man, but... You know, he realizes that Nicol Bolas is kind of a problem because Ghost Ugin's like being like, yo, dog, get out of there.
Killed me. Yeah.
So he then goes back to Tarkir because Ugin kind of leads him there.
Got it.
And him and Soren, in a Marty McFly kind of way, get sent back in time.
Got it.
So like he realizes that Ugin is dead. He finds the crypt of Ugin. But using Ugin's dead body, him being super god dragon dude when he died, is able to travel back in time right before the battle between Nicol Bolas and Ugin.
And that's Sarkon.
That's
triumphant.
Fate Reforged.
Oh, yeah. Or Sarkon
No, Sarkon's not there yet. That's when Ugin shows up. That's the first time we get the Ugin card, is Fate Reforged.
But when Sarkon travels back in time,
I will get to
Teamer Sarkon?
No. So the one that travels back in time is Sarkon Dragon. Slayer?
Speaker?
The red
dragon
one.
Speaker.
The red one.
The mono red
Got
one.
Got it. Yeah,
so he's there. He shows up. He goes back in time. He kind of falls in love with Narset before going back in time.
Oh.
Goes back in time. Saves Ugin.
Okay.
Basically, Nicol Bolas kills Ugin.
Yep.
But like before he dies, he uses a piece of a hedron that he still has. Not a hedron crab, just straight up hedron. He mills him three times every place land. He latches it onto Ugin. It forms a space cocoon. And Ugin heals himself over the next 1,000 years.
Exactly.
Sarkon then, because time magic, is ripped out of time and put back onto modern day Tarkir.
Got it.
All the dragons are back because instead of Ugin dying and the storms going away, Ugin's been like napping, but the storms have been going crazy, which is where the new elder dragons came from. And Ugin's back, and Narset is now a planeswalker.
Got it.
Her spark left, and now, and that is where Blue Teamer
Sarkon Unbroken
came from. So Sarkon has been every color combination but white.
Sarkon Unbroken is one of is like
He was red green on Junt because he's all like animal dragons, and then he was mad, so he was like red black, and then he was mono red.
He might be one of my favorite Sarkons, Sarkon might be one of my favorite planeswalkers, just for the sake of like, I just kind of like his role in the story. I also just like his cards in general, though none of them are ever powerful enough to actually be played in a format that I like. They're all like too expensive or cumbersome. And we even talked about this for modern. Like Sarkon Unbroken's a sweet card, but like it doesn't do anything you can't already get just with a better card.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's just like close. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's really close. And Teamer's a sweet color combination.
No, I like Sarkon for this reason, because of the story. He's basically Marty McFly. So he's Marty McFly, Ugin's Doc Brown.
And now he's traveled back in time, man. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Narset's the actress who got replaced in the second Back to the Future movie. If anyone on the Twitch stream knows who the actress is, let us know.
I'm thinking, but...
So that happens. So now Ugin's back.
Right.
Ugin goes... Now that he's back, it's like, oh man, the Eldrazi are back. He goes back to Zendikar, and he's chilling in the Eye of Ugin being like, ugh, what happened? Meanwhile, Gideon's like, yo, we need to kill these Eldrazi.
Right, and Gideon came from...
Rise Eldrazi. He showed up fighting the Eldrazi.
He just was a random...
No, so Gideon starts off in Theros, and he was a troubled youth, and he got put in prison for reasons. There he learned how to use his...
I'm indestructible.
His hieromancy, power.
Hieromancy.
But how did he? How could he start in Theros if Theros happened like years after?
No. So his first planeswalker card is Rise of Eldrazi.
Yeah, right.
He shows up. He's finally Eldrazi. He's a badass knight dude. Has like a cool Saral, which is like metal whips that come out of your hand.
Oh yeah.
Indestructible dude. Then we find out of Magic Origins his storyline, which is from Theros originally.
Right. Got it.
He was all about.
That's Kithion.
Kithion.
Exactly. And so he goes off on a quest to basically... Well, so Tragic Arrogance is him thinking that he could kill Erebos, and Erebos like, nope, and like just kills all of his buddies. And so when he looks around and sees that...
All of his friends are dead.
Because he's indestructible, right? So he goes all like, you know, turtle shell.
Right.
And all his friends die. He looks around. He realizes that it was completely his fault.
And he gets warped to Bant.
Yeah, his spark ignites, and he planeswalks for the first time to Bant. And then that's why we see... So his first printed card is back... There, even though his origin,
and that's where the like, so basically, Gideon is his name with an accent that's not Therosian.
Got it.
So Kithion is Theros accent. Gideon is
Gideon,
Alara Block accent.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people had a problem with, and I'm like, it took me a while to settle on this, but I'm pretty sure just like he grew up. Like I have friends who are Indian or even Turkish who have like their name. That are said a certain way, but because so many people say it this certain way, they're just like, fine, this is like, my name. And then that's how they introduce it to people. Yeah. So like I had a friend, Hari, and his name is actually Harui, but he goes by Hari because no one's ever going to get that. And I had a, you know, so that's, it's kind of like that is the way I'm going to say it. It went down. And then the spelling is because you're translating planes to English. Like none of that makes sense.
True.
Right.
they just wave that away. But so
so that's where he comes from, and his whole thing is like he, white planeswalker, right? Protection, like the army and all
order
that
stuff. And
exactly. Yeah. So he's all like, hey, we have a responsibility as planeswalkers. We can do what nobody else can do. We can travel from plane to plane, and we can defend them from, you know, things that they can't defend themselves from. And so he takes it upon himself to cleanse Zendikar of these Eldrazi, and he starts doing everything he can to enlist the other planeswalkers to come help him. And some are more apt to do it than others. Obviously, Nissa's on board because it's her plane.
Right.
And then he somehow ropes Jace into it, and then Chandra eventually comes around. She originally was like, no, I'm going to go off and do my own thing.
Well, Jace feels obligated because he's the cause of it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Him and Chandra kind of is the same deal. Chandra comes back and she's like, oh man, I guess this was my fault.
So it turns out actually that from a storytelling standpoint, Magic Orange is like one of the coolest things that's ever happened.
It consolidated a lot of things.
I really liked it because it gave you the history. You see the demon, you see the demonic pact, you see Kithian's origins, you learn about Jace and why he's all like cool, and Chandra, and who's that other one?
Kithian, Chandra, and then Liliana,
Nissa.
Yeah, and so we got Nissa. Yeah, we got Nissa.
Who's really boring?
Got it.
Yeah, she kind of is, but
cool.
She needs. They gave her a character flaw, and it's really, really, really not going to work as a main character for them.
Which is
she's a racist.
Just like straight up.
In the first time you see Nissa, she's like kind of a villain, straight up racist.
Huh.
And they kind of retconned that, so she's no longer racist. But by retconning that, now she's just kind of.
Just
The professor from Tolarian Community College did really good videos of him interviewing each of the main five planeswalkers.
Got it.
Jimmy Wong, who from the Command Zone, is actually Jace in these five videos.
Cool.
And goes over their like character flaws. And the Nissa one's really good because she's like, I'm perfect and I love trees. And he's like, you're a racist. No.
That one was good.
That's my Nissa invitation.
Got it.
But, okay, so... Ugin's there.
Yeah.
Eventually, Gideon gets all these guys to join in. Jace finds out from Ugin that Ugin's like, no, don't kill the Eldrazi. Right. They're important for the reality of the world. We don't know what that will cause. And Jace is like, well,
I can't think of anything else.
Nah.
Everything we've tried doesn't work. So,
they try to trap them, and then the demon guy.
Is it actually? Is he
Omnixilus?
Is he correct, or is Ugin being like influenced by the evil?
I think Ugin's correct.
Yeah, so Ugin's thing was to trap them again, right? So again, the whole keep the fist here so they can't drift things. So they come up with this whole Hedron network that they align, right? So the Hedron alignment, all that stuff. And
that's a card.
Yep, it was going to work.
Network, I know.
It was going to work, and they were pushing the last one in place and everything. And our boy Omnixilus, like, oh, hey, there's a perfect opportunity for me to get my spark
Omnixilus
back.
Both steals all of the energy to get his spark back while also calling Kozilek.
Yeah,
wow.
At the same time, who was underground.
What a D-bag.
And so they're like, well, we're not going to be able to do this, but like Jace being like, oh, I know where the ley lines are. Mm-hmm. Nissa, you channel them. Yep. And then she's like, all right, got the ley lines working together. I'm going to pull all of the Eldrazi into instead of them being just their heads in, they like bring them fully onto the plane.
Got it.
And then Chandra's like, I'm going to use this Leyline magic to blow them up. And then Gideon's like, I'll make sure the other Eldrazi don't kill you. Which is kind of boring, but whatever.
Hey, every role's important.
Yeah, every role's important. So that's how the two Titans were killed.
So, okay, in this universe, like, just the story of magic and all this, because it's all like, it's extremely, what's the word I'm looking for? Archetypal. It is, but I'm looking for something else. But the whole good and evil is very clearly pronounced.
Sure.
So is there like
they do have different versions. I mean, the Eldrazi aren't really evil. They're just mindlessly hungry. And then the Phyrexians are more classically evil in a sense that they want to convert everyone to the way of life. And
so like, okay, in the sense that like
Nicobolas is very, I am the only important thing in the world, which is kind of the classic sense of evil.
But so, yeah. But like in the sense that like one ring to rule them all type of thing, what's the ultimate evil? Like what's the...
Right now, if we were to peg something, I would go with Nicobolas.
Yeah, so
he's essentially Sauron.
Yeah, like if you look at like different archetypes, like the Joker is. I mean, this is going into, I guess, D&D like character trait charts where there's like chaotic good, chaotic evil, chaotic neutral. The Joker is chaotic evil, and there really isn't a great analog to the Joker. But Nicobolas is the like I am. I will kill anyone, do anything I want to make me the most powerful person, which is kind of what our classic definition of evil. Because he is a dictator. He's like, he's very Trump-esque.
He's Sauron. He's just 100% Sauron.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Versus like, I would say the Eldrazi are much more comparable to, Galactus, I guess. I mean, it's literally what they are, but I'm trying to think of a good, Lord of the Ringsy.
Nah, just keep going. Cause
So, kill the two Eldrazi. Then Jace, on the behest of Ugin and Soren. Well, so Ugin, like, when he first shows up, sends Soren to go find Nahiri. Because he's like, okay, Soren, you, me, and Nahiri need to fix this.
Right.
We need to trap these Eldrazi. So Soren goes off to find Nahiri. Then Jace is like, hey, help me defeat these guys. And he's like, no, I'm waiting for Soren and Nahiri. And Jace is like, okay, I'm going to do this anyways with my own buddies. Peace.
And who are his buddies that he gets?
The Gatewatch.
The Gatewatch.
Nyssa.
Oh, got Gideon, it. Okay.
Chandra.
It's Chandra. So
for the watch.
Exactly. The Gatewatch is basically everything's Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I was actually really sad there wasn't a legendary wall in Khons of Tarkir block.
Right.
moving on. No, Khons of Tarkir block was basically Game of Thrones, the story. But moving. Moving beyond that, we're going towards... All right, Shadow of Innistrad block. Jace then goes looking for Soren, because Soren has disappeared. Soren goes to his home planet, and Nahiri is messing it up.
Yeah, so what's going on here is, originally they had this deal, right? We had Ugin, Soren, Nahiri, and they were the original ones who trapped the Eldrazi, stuff like that. And so Nahiri is from Zendikar, and she's like, all right, I'm going to stay here and monitor things. If anything happens, I'm going to call you guys, and you come help me.
Got it.
And they're like, all right, cool, not a problem. So Soren goes off and does his thing. And what his thing is he goes on Innistrad, and he does the whole balance of power. You know, he creates Avacyn because the vampires are going crazy and eating everything, and so Avacyn needs to be there to kind of keep things in check. That took a lot of his power, so he kind of goes into hibernation mode. You know,
right.
I don't know, he's a vampire, so he lays down in a crypt somewhere and, like, chills out. And because he did that, and he set up some wards or whatever, the theory, well, what he thinks happened is he didn't get the message. And here he said, help, help, help. Well, Ugin was dead,
right,
and Soren was in sleep mode, so he didn't get the message. And so after the Eldrazi are all trapped and stuff like that, she goes, well, that's not cool. You promised. You said you're going to come, and you didn't come. So she goes off to Innistrad to find him, figure out what's going on. And yeah, so that's why she starts wreaking havoc on his plane, because she's like, I'm going to do to your plane what happened to my plane.
You're talking about Avacyn?
No, this is Nahiri. Nahiri goes over there and be like, hey, like, you didn't come to help when my plane got rocked by these Eldrazi, so I'm going to rock your plane. And she's off rampaging.
So can I ask a question?
Sure.
Where the heck is Ajani in all this? What happened to him?
Okay, so Ajani...
Where did he start and why is he just irrelevant? He has like seven printings.
I have two things on this. One, Ajani is a little bit less involved because he's too expensive to make in a movie.
He's a cat.
They won't admit to it, but he's definitely a more expensive character to be a main character versus a supplemental character.
He'd be so sweet if he was...
He's going to be in it, but they're basically establishing that Ajani is now Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Okay.
So Ajani is older than everyone. Ajani Vengeant happened a long time ago.
Right.
And so he's like aging. He's back in his prime, he was fighting it. So Ajani went and helped Elsbeth during Theros block, which I don't think we're going to get into today because it's a really insular story.
Yeah.
She's really cool. But Ajani is basically on Theros, chilling with all the cat people, the Leonin on Theros, figuring his things out.
He's like, and like his later printings when he's like old and grizzled, and like he kind of reminds
me. He's the mentor of heroes.
He kind of reminds me of.
Also known as Obi-Wan Kenobi. Gandalf. He could be a Gandalf.
He also just kind of like reminds me of the way that Denzel Washington looks in the Book of Eli. Like just that feeling of like sort of grizzled and walking the world with like a backpack and like, you know, the knowledge to like take people down. But like, yeah, anyway. Moving on.
Yeah, so that's where he is and all this. And again, the Theros story, pretty cool, but very insular. So, yeah, so back on Innistrad. And that's why a lot of people theorize that, you know, Emrakul is the big baddie of Innistrad causing all the madness. Because, again, you can follow the whole, do you know the whole Clue thing?
Yes, well, I don't know it, but I mean.
So the Tamio's journal flavor text is different in different printings and different languages, stuff like that. And the number, it says entry, and it's a three number entry. It'll say like 246 or whatever.
Got it.
And if you go look at all the clues, all the clue tokens have a different flavor text. And each one has a different number of letters. So the entry basically tells you, all right, the first number tells you which clue to go look at. Let's say the first number is 5. So you go find the clue that has 5 words in its flavor text, and then the next 2 numbers tell you which word it is and where it falls into
sweet puzzle.
The end code or whatever. And the end code is, remember they came in 3.
Which is a flavor text from a card in Battle for Zendikar block where Ugin is talking to Jace, and he says Here's the deal. Emrakul is coming.
Got it. Because we only have gotten one version of Emrakul. So how are we going to get Emrakul in another?
So Eldrazio, the only other thing other than planeswalkers that can travel between planes, because they don't live on planes. They live in the space between
blind eternity.
And Emrakul's abilities are to make people mad. Where Kozilek affects gravity and reality.
Right.
And Kozilek consumes. Emrakul affects minds and biology. Ulamog consumes.
Kozilek, a mattery shaper, right? So he does all the gravity stuff.
Gravity, reality is warping around his...
And then Emrakul is madness. So that's why it's like, oh, well, obviously, you know, the madness guy is causing the... So that's why they think the only thing powerful enough to make an angel go mad is Emrakul.
So are we thinking that we're going to get Emrakul in the next set?
Emrakul will be a flip card in the next set.
So here's what I'm thinking. So take a look at Nahiri.
Yeah. Right?
One of her abilities is exile target tap creature, artifact, or enchantment.
Right.
Like, why on earth do we need to, like, exile enchantment or artifacts? Like, that's not really relevant.
Yeah, right.
So we think that there might be something in the next set that basically it might be like a call.
If you look at the cards,
Emrakul, and so she could be, because she's a harbinger, right? The harbinger,
right?
So she comes before the great destruction, you know.
And the idea is she also plays really well with Emrakul,
right?
Old Emrakul, because her 2 abilities are discard a card, so you can, if it's in your hand, you can get rid of it, draw a new one, and then her ultimate is to put it from your deck into play,
right?
Her literal ultimate ability is Emrakul. Her plus ability worked really well with Madness, too.
And discarding him so he reshuffles.
Yeah. On top of that, the Cryptolith. If you look at all the Innistrad cards, almost all of them have these little, like, they look like slivers almost, they're made out of little rocks. Like,
tentacle-looking things.
And the idea is it's Nahiri making those to call Emrakul to Innistrad.
Okay.
And it's on its way, causing all of this madness to happen.
So that's where we're at in the story right now.
That's where we're literally at today.
Yeah, so what's going on is Jace is over here trying to find out what's going on. And so following the story right now is like, here's a story over here, here's a story over here. And eventually, you know, they're probably going to bring it all together. Like right now, I have no idea why they even spent a chapter on the Gitrog monster, but he got an entire story all to himself.
Well, they do that where they do... Especially in the, like, the Wizards has said the first couple weeks, especially during the release, are a lot more world building stories.
Okay.
And the stories between the 2 sets coming out are much more continuation of plot stories.
Is this all Uncharted Realm stuff you're
doing? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where the
once a week Uncharted Realms comes out, it's literally a continuation of the story. Sometimes it's a small story.
Did they stop making books?
Yeah.
Yes.
They stopped making books 5 years ago.
Got it. Okay. I see. I've paid no attention to any of this, so I didn't really know.
Like, isn't Agents of Artifice is the last book, and that's from Shards of Alara block?
Got it.
And they also said because not everybody reads Uncharted Realms, that's why they wanted to put a lot of the story in the cards. So that's why you're going to have key cards. Things like Tamio's journal, for example, so you can kind of see, oh, hey, there's Jay's getting the journal. So the pivotal cards in this set are obviously Anguish Unmaking is one of them.
Yep.
Avacyn's judgment.
Yep.
Because she comes in like fighting Jace and stuff.
You wouldn't call Avacyn a key card? The fact that she flips and she's like a...
No, she's a character card. Character cards are different.
Yeah, so these are pivotal
moments. Oh, I see.
These are pivotal moments of the story.
Okay.
So like in Battle for Zendikar block, there's the one that all things lose hexproof and indestructible. Right. The green enchantment, and that's like Nissa using her ability to make it so they can kill the planeswalkers. And then there's the Chandra Surge card that does X damage to things, and that's Chandra killing both of the planeswalkers.
Got it. Okay.
Both of the Eldrazi.
Is that Titan's Fall? No,
Titan's Fall.
Yeah.
This one, it's Avacyn attacking Jason, Tommyo, Soren killing Avacyn.
There's three before that. Those are towards the end.
What are the three? My phone's dead. I can't look up cards. anyone on the chat? No. Tell us. While I bring up some fun facts. So the one thing is, cool things about Nahiri, she's the person who trained the Stoneforge Mystics.
Oh.
Yeah.
So she is a Stoneforge Mystic, but in the sense that she is the person responsible for, like, all Stoneforge Mystics are practicing the art of Nahiri's Lithomancy.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Other fun facts from the chat that I might want to bring over. Liliana is older than Ajani. Someone asked.
Huh. So she's Melisandre.
Who?
Yeah.
Lady Melisandre?
Yeah.
Yeah. Spoiler.
Spoiler. She's old. Real old.
Yeah.
But right now, there are four Gatewatch members. The other thing to keep in mind is during the Comic-Con storyline announcement for Magic Origins and Battle for Zendikar, because they announce the fall set at Comic-Con every year.
Right.
Or they announce a lot of information from the fall set. They basically said, the Magic Origins are our five main characters.
Okay.
Then Gatewatch came out 6 months later, and they were like, all right, now we're forming the Gatewatch, which is our team of planeswalkers.
But
there was only a green, white, blue, and red one.
Okay.
Liliana is that fifth Gatewatch member.
Okay.
I would bet a pack war with you on the next live stream that Liliana will have an oath card.
Oath of Liliana?
There will be an Oath of Liliana in the next set.
And that's because we didn't get a black oath card.
Yeah, I think two things will happen. I think Liliana will help defeat Emrakul. In return, Jace will help Liliana figure out her business with the Chain Veil.
They used to be a thing, you know.
Every time they have a story, there's a lot of like romance, like, between the two of them.
A lot of tension going on. They used to be a thing, and people were like, oh yeah, they used to be like a thing.
Which is kind of weird. It's like when like a 65-year-old dude's dating a 20-year-old.
You're a planeswalker. It doesn't matter. It's completely different.
Well, so it is always interesting you talk about that, so there was no Black Oath, and that's obviously intentional when they do something like that. They don't ever make...
Liliana is 9,000 years old.
They don't ever,
over 9,000.
They don't ever make like four pieces out of a five-piece cycle.
That's true.
But there is actually one interesting example of this, and this is in the previous Innistrad, and this is the fact that they made there's Diagraph Captain, who's blue black.
Oh, the four.
There's
lords. Uncommon lords.
There's Immerwolf, which is green red. There's the vampire one, which is black red, and then there's
Stormcreak Noble.
What?
Stormcreak Noble?
No, it's not Noble. It's Stormcreak Captain.
Yeah,
that's the black red one, and then. Basically the one that's missing. The blue white one is Drogskull Captain.
Yeah.
But yeah, humans is missing. They never made a green white human captain at Uncommon, which I always thought was so weird. But I realized it was part of the story.
Right.
And then I wondered if it was because they had made Mare of Avabrok as a rare in the previous set, and humans were supposed to be represented as possible.
No. The intent behind it was always, and specifically and especially in that set.
Yeah.
Was about making it feel like the humans were isolated. So
humans versus
In the first set in Innistrad block, it was like the monsters are coming in, they're rising. And that's why you got four, the humans were a little bit singular, but in that set it was all about like, no, the humans are about to go extinct. So
right.
They don't have a lord because all the monsters are winning.
Got it.
That is a story. So you can argue that there's no black pack because of storylines, but they've said the Magic Origins Planeswalkers are their main characters.
You mean Oath, no Black Oath, yeah.
Correct. Oath. And with that in mind, we're most likely getting... Liliana will join the Oath at the end of Eldric Moon, and then in response, the next set will probably be trying to figure out how to save Liliana from the Chain Veil or whatever.
Yeah. So which Planeswalkers are we getting?
You guys keep
in
talking.
The next set?
I desperately have to blow my nose, so just keep going.
Which Planeswalker are we getting in the next set?
Yeah.
For sure Liliana. And then the question is, do we get Tamio? I think we might get just one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Because they gave us, what?
Four in this one.
Instead of three and two.
They might, if we get two, it'll be her and Tamio. That means we got two blue planeswalkers, which, like, means we won't get another blue planeswalker.
Liliana's going to be blue, too.
No. Tamio's blue.
Yeah.
And Jace is blue.
Oh, you're saying they would give us two in the block.
Yeah, which might, never happens. So Tamio would have to be two colors. Mm-hmm. And I don't think she's blue-white. Mm-hmm. I don't think she's blue-red. I don't think she's blue-black. I don't think she's blue-green. So she's kind of mono blue, which makes it really unlikely. I think Tamio is going to be kind of like Ugin, where Ugin showed up all over Battle for Zendikar block, but we didn't actually get a card.
She's in like art and everything.
But, yeah. But so was Ugin.
Here we go. Key moments in Shadows of Innistrad. Descend upon the sinful, where the angels go crazy and they swoop down and they start purging the earth of sin. So that's Descend upon the sinful. Tamio's journal, where Jace goes and finds, you know, what's going on.
Tamio's journal.
Yeah, why are the angels going crazy? There's that one. Epiphany at the Drown Yard, where he goes to the shore and he finds all the cryptoliths pointing to this one spot. And there's all these cryptoliths in a circle, and he goes out there. The tides are going crazy, so he thinks it's some kind of moon magic, and there's like zombies and all this stuff just kind of like
chilling.
Chilling. And angels circling overhead, so there's just all this weird stuff going on. Anguish Unmaking, where Soren has to undo his creation, much to my chagrin, because Avacyn is my favorite. And then Engulf the Shore. Which we haven't got there yet, but they bolded that as a key moment in Shadows of Innistrad. So those are also in the fat pack. If you get a fat pack for Shadows of Innistrad, they have that book inside.
It has all five keys. Yeah.
Which I think is slightly different than this list here, but yeah, they have it there.
So this is in response to Haberdashed, who commented, I still think we might get Liliana the Veil reprinted Eldritch Moon. Or Eternal Masters, because Maro said that he wanted to reprint her in M15, but Mono Black was already dominating Standard. So here's the deal. They have basically said, officially, as an official status on multiple places, including Maro, that they are no longer reprinting in Standard high power level cards from Modern. As a blanket rule ever. And that's an issue. Eternal Masters is completely likely, and I wouldn't be surprised if she's in Eternal Masters, but she's 100% not going to be in Eldritch.
So powerful modern staples will not be printed in Standard.
Yeah, basically it says they tried it with Thoughtseize and it was a giant mistake.
Hmm. Okay.
So they just need to keep making Eternal reprint sets, which is fine because then they have sweet limited formats that they need to play.
We're going to get, you know, right now we're getting two draft sets this summer plus the From the Vaults plus Commander sets plus dual decks. Like there's a lot of stuff that they now can reprint stuff in. And I think they're going to make more of a concerted effort to accomplish that in those places, we're going to see what happens. Actually, Chaz Andre is friend of the cast, previous guest, did a really good article on this today. It's on Star City Games Premium. But
I'll use your account.
There's definitely it's definitely worth reading once it becomes free in a couple months or a couple weeks. So that's kind of it for the storyline that we're going to go over today. We kind of went over most of them, so we'll probably take a little bit break. I do want to jump in the first thing since we get to those kind of storylines. I do want to ask, while we do our sign-offs, because right before we do anything, I think we might have some questions, and if they do, we'll answer them. But where can people find you guys?
For me, I am at Sean Penrod on Twitter, and you'll see my smiling face there, which is pretty much branded everywhere, so you can find that. And my podcast is MTG Pro Tutor, where I interview, you know, professional Magic players and stuff like that. But relevant to this discussion today, I actually put out episode 1 of Shadows Over Innistrad. I released in a special edition called MagicTheStory.com. You can go to MagicTheStory.com, and that's where you can find the highly produced rendition of Magic lore. So if you like this discussion, then definitely go check that out because it's really sweet. We have nice sound effects. It really brings the story to life. It's like a movie in your mind.
Cool.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that, like, as you said before, there's an option to continue funding it sort of per episode. So if you guys listen and you think it's really cool, it's this sort of a thing, except you can really get into the story and give it a chance because, I mean, I enjoyed listening and learning. I hope I didn't make too many dumb jokes, but it's interesting stuff. I mean, there's
good
story, and they're doing a good job now, I think, with developing it and making it much more interesting than they used to. And clearer. So you guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. I, as well as do this, I have an action movie podcast that streams live at 3:00 on Wednesdays, and I do a bunch of after shows and press coverage for things that happen. So I'll be covering all the press for Preacher on AMC coming up, interviewing all the cast and Seth Rogen and everybody this week. And I cover like Fear the Walking Dead and The 100 and various other shows at AfterBuzz TV. So follow me on Twitter at Ben Bateman Media, and you'll see what I do.
You can follow me at at Kes Wiley. I generally rant a lot about Star Wars, Game of Thrones, Magic the Gathering. Just rant. I'll argue with anyone over it. It's like my favorite thing is picking fights with people on the internet.
This is not
in a trolly way. Like in a just like I like discussing how right I am on stuff.
Like sometimes I'll need to call Alex for work. I'll be like, hey, so you know, I have this, and he doesn't answer his phone. I'm like, I can't believe he's just not responding to text or answering. So then I'm gonna just create like a proxy account on Twitter and like start engaging him about Game of Thrones in the middle of his workday because he can't resist. He like can't he can't help himself.
Wait, have you actually done this?
No. Okay. This is what I should do though, and I can't get a hold of you because I know you're paying attention, but only to those things.
Sometimes. Yeah. Not as much. I'm really busy. I mean, that's the other thing. If you guys want to find, you know, my website, I guess at, it's kes.co, but if you go to kes.co/GOT, you can actually find the Game of Thrones game I made and sent out on the internet for free. So you can try that out. It's sweet. Make sure to follow the podcast. We're at the MMCast. You should follow our sister podcast, Just In Life. Go subscribe to them. They're the Command Zone.
At rocketjump.com. And of course, we have a Patreon. Our continued growth of this podcast and additional content is helped greatly by you guys pitching in
this
and helping us there.
This was live because of you. We had a blue microphone because of you. This will have a YouTube video version because of you guys, Patreon members.
There's going to be video streaming, actual video streaming versions of these coming in the future. Sure. That is because of you guys. So we just are going to continue expanding and ramping up and doing more. But, you know, we have to continue paying people and buying things to help make that happen. So if you guys want to help, we literally can't do it any other way. This is the only income stream the podcast has.
Right. And I guess the last important thing is make sure to keep an eye on us for at GPLA. We're going to be doing stuff. Keep an eye on Twitter, Facebook, all these places we mentioned. You'll get to find cool stuff. We'll be doing cool, awesome content there of some sort.
Yep, it'll be awesome.
Last but not least, we only got one question in the meantime, is what about Cavern of Souls? This is from Gabby573. I actually think that's the highest likely reprint for this set. It doesn't do anything negative, the standard. It just makes the tribe slightly more playable, which I think is fine. So its power level isn't going to be that damaging to the format.
You mean Eldritch Moon will have Cavern of Souls?
I think it could have Cavern of Souls.
That'd be nice.
It's from Avacyn, so it's from the plane. Yeah. That's where it originally was. Yeah. It plays with a lot of the you know the themes that they're going with, and it does, like making counter magic worse isn't necessarily something Wizards is like, oh man, we can't do that. So I definitely could see it being
the
card
really
that they reprint.
That would be really sweet.
Cool. Someone's listening because of you. All right, I'm going to stop the recording, but we're not going to stop the stream.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.